This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast, where we chat all things creepy, cannabis, true crime, paranormal, and weird. I'm Madeline.
I'm Rachel.
Oh, that's weird. Was my voice cracking?
I didn't want to say anything else weird after last time, and I was also trying to make sure that my voice was recording properly. Oh god, I clicked on the wrong thing. Well, before I get into running my jaws, what are you smoking today?
Today, the strain is called Blue Cheese.
Ew.
A popular strain. It's actually pretty popular. I haven't seen it a lot where we are, but it's pretty popular historically. And it's an indica dominant hybrid with a pretty potent THC. But usually it's around like 20%. And as the name suggests, it does taste strongly of blue cheese, giving it a very distinct flavor.
Ew.
And the aroma is like a little blue cheese, but also kind of sweet blueberry.
Okay, that might help. I have a personal like issue with blue cheese.
I love blue cheese.
You would love blue cheese.
This strain causes a mix of joy and euphoria with like deep body relaxation. It's very apparent in the body high, but the sativa portion keeps it lively, so you're not just gonna pass the fuck out.
Okay. So you can still be alert and aware for this crazy story.
Exactly. But it is said to be a good choice when treating anxiety, depression, pain. It helps with migraines, individuals who have PTSD or ADHD, which is me, or bipolar disorder.
Oh, that's me.
Well, we're all the gang's all here.
We're covered. We are covered. Yeah.
And insomniacs can also find some relief with this strain. So,
you'll have to let me know how it goes. Okay, well, I mentioned in our last episode, but this was requested by one of our listeners, and this is covering, I believe it said the Papin sisters, Papin, this French, so I'm doing my best.
Papi.
So, our that's story probably, begins, that's not correct?
No, I don't think so.
We're going to be talking about a woman named Clemence Derry. Good old Clemence. She was in a relationship with a man. His name was Gustav Papin.
Okay.
Gustav. Correct. So while she and Gustav were dating and courting or whatever the fuck you did back in 1900, she was rumored to be having an affair with her employer. That's right. I think this is the time when they were using the word sausage wallet.
I wish they wouldn't.
Well, they did, so. There were rumors swirling, and at one point, Clemence finds herself pregnant.
Oh.
But despite the rumors, she and Gustav got married in October of 1901.
Gustav.
5 months later, Clemence gives birth to a daughter who she named Amelia.
Okay.
Gustav, although married to her, he just like could not shake the feeling that Clemence was still getting some on the side. Like, he just believed it to his core. Mm-hmm. So he was like, I'm gonna get a job in another town, and he tells Clemence, Listen, we are leaving our hometown, which their hometown was called Les Mans. He's like, we're getting the fuck up out of here. Well, Clemence is having absolutely none of it. She declares that she would rather die than move away, and that's that on that.
Mm-hmm.
She will die. So instead, Gustav just said, fuck it. And he stayed with her because
I'm
Clemence,
done with him.
She just knew what she wanted.
He needs to man up.
She wanted to have her cake and eat it too. And she did not want to leave Les Mans.
Oh.
So Clemence and Gustav went on to have two more daughters together. Christine, who was born March 8th, 1905. And Leah, born September 15th, 1911.
Mm-hmm.
When Christine was born, it was determined that Clemence was deemed not nurturing and unsuitable for motherhood.
Perfect.
Awesome. So as a result, instead of forcibly keeping a child she didn't really want, she gave Christine to her aunt and uncle on Gustav's side.
Okay.
So Amelia, their first daughter, still lives with them. So she's suitable for her. But Christine comes along and she's like, absolutely not. You can say what you will. I would be
motherfucking offended.
No, because my suspicion is that their first daughter is with the affair partner and that the other two are with her husband. That's my assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a reason for that assumption later. This is an old case, so I had very limited access to information. So there's a lot of hearsay and guessing.
We love that.
Yeah. When Leo was born in 1911, she was sent to live with her uncle on her mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
Around the time when Leo was born and their first daughter Amelia was about 9 or 10 years old, she alleged that her father Gustav had sexually assaulted her. Again, another that's part of the reason I think, not that like a parent couldn't do that, but I don't know, I just have like a feeling she wasn't his. Which makes it no better, by the way. Clemence believed that her daughter seduced her father. So she sent her to live at the Bon Pasteur Catholic Orphanage, which was well known for being all about discipline. She was like, I'm going to send you off there.
Okay, cool.
So she was like, you're a seductress. You got to get out of here. Get the fuck out. At 9 or 10 years old, mind you. Soon after, both Christine and Leah found themselves at the orphanage as well due to circumstances with their living situation. So, like, some people they were living with passed on and they couldn't stay there anymore. So, it was a different time back then. Even though Clemence was unfit, she was still their legal, like, parent. So, even though she sent them to live at the orphanage, the plan was that they were going to stay there until they were 15 and could go to work. And then she would be involved again in that.
Once they're earning.
Correct. Facts. Cool. In 1918, Amelia decided to enter a covenant, effectively ending her relations with her family altogether. And she was like, I want nothing to do with this. I want a life with the Lord. Fuck all y'all. And as far as anybody knows, she lived out the remainder of her life at the covenant she joined and was peaceful and happy and everything was fine. Christine also received a calling to be a nun, and by all accounts wanted to be, but Clemence instead forced her into work because obviously she wanted money. She was already familiar with cleaning, cooking, and household responsibilities from being at the orphanage, so it was a pretty easy transition to be like a live-in maid, which is a really popular job at the time. So
I wouldn't hate that, honestly.
Honestly, like, I'll be cleaning, like, putting headphones on, just cleaning, bopping along, living my life. While Christine was noted as being a hard worker, though, and a good cook, she was noted as being insubordinate at times. Leah, however, was quiet, introverted, completely obedient, but was considered to be not as intelligent as Christine. So they thought she was a little bit, like, not with it. Although employers were like completely content with their work, however, Clemence wasn't satisfied with their pay and forced them to seek better paid opportunities. So she was all up in their business.
Okay.
So as a result, they ended up working as maids in various different homes, but they preferred to work together whenever they could. So, by the way, this is not a particularly long case because there's only so much I could find. I'm sure the listeners will appreciate a little break. So, flash forward to 1926, good old Christine finds herself a live-in position that seems literally perfect. Okay. And she moves into 6 Rue Riere for the Lancelin family. That consisted of Monsieur René Lancelin, who was a retired solicitor, which is a lawyer for those of you who don't know. His wife, Madame, I think her name is Lonnie. It's spelled like Leonie, so I think it's Lonnie. Lancelin, okay. And their younger daughter, Genevieve, who lived in the house. Their older daughter, was married and didn't live in the house.
Got it.
After a few months with the family, things, they were going well. Christine was doing her job, making money. Clement seemed fine with the money she was making, so Christine was like, hey, now's as good a time as ever, because she really liked working with her sister, and she convinced them to bring Leah in as a chambermaid for the family. And honestly, for years, things went really, really well. The sisters both worked there as a chambermaid and respectively cleaning and cooking. They worked hard. The money was good. Everybody was literally happy. But unfortunately, as things go, that didn't last. Sadly, because a different time, different resources, Madame Lonnie found herself developing depression a few years into their employment. And her depression resulted in these outbursts and episodes of rage where she began to abuse the sisters basically from that point forward. She just started making them a target of her rage, verbally abusing them, berating them, bullying them. Yeah. And it was all like a really bad 360. Like, they were happy and everything was completely fine. And then she starts like banging their heads into walls. Just.
Well, what the fuck?
Well, the thing too is, like, as somebody who has bipolar, one of my biggest symptoms is I will be completely fine and then I will lash out, like, just lose my shit. And I can't imagine, I mean, I can because I've been unmedicated, but living in a time where there weren't resources. Mm-hmm. So, not excusing that behavior, but it can get pretty violent and aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, I can totally picture it. That abuse could happen at any time, so I imagine the sisters were kind of living on eggshells and just walking around wondering when she was going to snap.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it gets... the situation does come to a head, unfortunately, on February 2nd, 1933. So, Madame Lonnie and Genevieve had been out shopping, and they had planned to attend, a dinner that evening with Monsieur Lancelin. They came home from shopping and the house was completely dark and they were like, what the fuck is going on? And the sisters immediately were like, hey, Christine tried to plug in a faulty iron and we blew like the electricity. Well, that sent Madame Lonnie into a fucking tailspin. She said, absolutely not. She became immediately irritated and went to attack the sisters, like with rage, like she had in the past, going to put her hands on them, going to physically attack them. So this was all taking place on the first floor landing. Well, Christine had all she was going to take and she fucking snaps. She snaps and she lunges across at Genevieve. Mm-hmm. So the mom is attacked, like coming at them. Christine says, fuck you, and lunges at Genevieve, the daughter, and she gouges her fucking eyes out. Just bare hands. Just fucking gouges them out. Can you just even... Yes. Oh, yes. So she gouges her eyes out with her bare hands. And as she's doing it, she's yelling at Leah. And she's like, attack her! Attack her! And she's yelling at her to attack Madame Lonnie and do the same thing. And Leah says, bet. And Leah lunges at Madame Lonnie, the mom, and gouges her eyes out too!
Oh my god!
She gouges her eyes out too.
Oh my god.
So they
what
have...
What did the daughter do? I forget.
What did she do? She nothing. She was existing there.
Oh my god. Now, she just got fucking gouged.
Yes, it's unclear. Like, I imagine she
there's
might have
probably
taken,
abuse.
Yeah, but there's it couldn't be clear. Or I couldn't get clarity. So basically Christine attacks Genevieve and blinds her by gouging out her eyes. Then Leah attacks Lonnie and gouges out her eyes. Then while Leah's attacking Lonnie, Christine who was doing the first attack, she runs downstairs to the kitchen, and she gets a knife and a hammer, and then runs her ass back upstairs, and she's like, I'm gonna finish the job. So, they continue to attack the mom and daughter with the weapons, mainly getting their thighs and, like, butt, and at some point, they also found a large pewter pitcher nearby, like a giant fucking metal pitcher, and they bludgeoned them to death.
Perfect.
Yeah, they, and this is what makes me believe that they really were attacked and defended themselves, is because, like, this is clearly a crime of just pure rage, passion, just, you, okay, like, she had had a fucking enough. You don't gouge somebody's eyes out for no reason. Like, that's hatred. Well, sometime later, Monsieur Lancelin returns home, and he finds the house dark, So he's like, oh, I guess they went to dinner. So he goes to dinner. And he gets he there.
One step out of the car, he said, oh,
it's dark inside. A free night.
Closes the door, zooms away.
To his credit, he gets to his friend's house and realizes that his family's not there, and he does immediately go home. He's like, wait a second. But this time he has his son-in-law with him, the one that's married to the older daughter. And around 6:30 or 7 p.m., they get back to the house. It's still dark, but they can see a light on in the sister's room, because remember, they were living. So they can see a light on in there, but the front door was bolted shut, so they couldn't get inside. Obviously, they were like, well, that's sus. So they went to the local police station, and they were like, hey, can you come help us? And the police come, and they, like, fucking climb over the garden wall and get in that way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. So once inside, they find the bodies of Madame Lancelin and her daughter Genevieve. Like I mentioned, they had both been bludgeoned and stabbed to the point of being unrecognizable because it was a pure rage killing. Madame Lancelin's eyes were found in the folds of the scarf around her neck. One of Genevieve's eyes was found under her body. And another was on the stairs at the other end of the hallway. So that one just took a little tour of the premises. It's not funny, but...
How did it get there?
At this time, they're thinking the Papin sisters, like, are also dead. Like, that they also were killed. So the policemen keep going upstairs, but then they find their room is locked. And they're like, wait a hot damn minute. This is also a wild time because, you know, nowadays, if, like, things are locked, you don't call the police. You just kick that bitch in. But here they do, like, all the appropriate channels. So after the officer had, like, been knocking but nobody answered, he was like, well, fuck you. He called a locksmith. And he was like, bet. So he called a whole-ass locksmith who came and opened the door. Okay. When they opened the door, he found the sisters naked and in bed together. With a bloody hammer that still had bits of hair stuck to it on a chair nearby. Under questioning, I mean, the sisters immediately were like, yeah, we did it. They didn't try to hide it. They were like, sure did.
What?
They confessed immediately, but they did say that it was committed in self-defense. They were like, yeah, she attacked us and we defended ourselves with 45 different weapons and gouging out a few eyeballs. During the trial, the sisters protected each other and each confessed sole responsibility for the crimes, but they were placed in prison and separated from each other because they were like trauma bonded from their life. Christine in particular, the older one, she became extremely distressed because she couldn't see Leah. At one point, prison officials did kind of give in and allowed them to meet. This is kind of weird. At which time, Christine threw herself at Leah, unbuttoned her blouse, and just was begging her, please say yes. It caused some people to speculate they had an incestuous relationship because of that and them being in bed together. But that was later ruled out. Well, I don't know how you could fully rule that out. Honestly, like,
Who's ruling that out?
I can see that occurring. I mean, why are you, like, ripping open her shirt? Like, what other point is there?
Weird vibes.
Yeah, it was weird. In July 1933, Christine experienced a fit or episode in which she tried to gouge her own eyes out and had to be put in a literal straitjacket. And then she made a statement to the investigating magistrate stating that on the day of the murder, she had a similar episode. And that's what perpetuated the murders. And that she wouldn't have done it under normal circumstances. The sister's chosen lawyer pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity on behalf of them. Christine and Leah both demonstrated signs of mental illness, such as limiting eye contact and staring straight ahead, appearing to be in a daze. The court did appoint three doctors to administer psychological evaluations, but they concluded that the two had no mental disorders and deemed them sane to fit and, like, to stand trial. Sane and fit to stand trial. They also believed that Christine's affection for her sister was based on family ties and not incestuous relationships. So the three professionals felt that they just had, like, trauma bonded, but that it wasn't incestuous. I don't know, though, because when you see how it all goes down, I don't know. During the September 1933 trial, medical testimony noted a history of mental illness in the family. Their uncle mm-hmm. had died by suicide while their cousin was living in an asylum. The psychological community struggled to debate over a diagnosis for the sisters because they did feel that they had something, but they just didn't know what to call it. So after a lot of back and forth, it was concluded that Christine and Leah suffered from shared paranoid disorder, which is believed to occur when groups or pairs of people are isolated from the world, developing paranoia, and in one another, in this like dynamic, one partner dominates the other. So Christine would have been the dominating partner. This was especially true of Leah because Leah was so meek in personality and she was so overshadowed by Christine naturally to begin with.
I see.
Yeah. After the trial, jurors took 40 minutes to determine that the sisters were indeed guilty of the crime. Leah was considered to be under the influence of Christine because of her personality, and she was given a 10-year sentence, which was very, very light considering. Christine was sentenced to death by guillotine, because that's how fucking long ago this was, but it was commuted to life imprisonment. So they did waive the death penalty. Okay. It didn't really matter, though, because the separation from Leah proved to be just too much for Christine. Her condition deteriorated so rapidly once they were apart. She had written letters begging to be with Leah. However, it was just never granted. She had depression, bouts of madness, and eventually just completely refused to eat if they weren't going to let her see her. They transferred her to a mental institution, hoping she would benefit from professional help. Fucking day late and a dollar short.
Mm-hmm.
But
back then, a mental institution back then?
Because really the only thing that was going to help her was seeing her sister. And nowadays, she would have been granted that opportunity most likely if she wasn't eating. But unfortunately, she literally died. She starved herself to death and she died of something called cachexia, which is wasting away. She literally just wasted her body to death because she was so depressed. So she died on May 18th, 1937. Leah actually did better than Christine, and she only ended up serving 8 years of her 10-year sentence because she had good behavior in prison. After her release in 1941, she lived in the town of Nantes, which is where the jail was. She was joined by her mother, and she assumed a false identity and earned a living as a hotel maid that way. Some accounts state that Leah died in 1982, but there was a French film producer, Claude Ventura, who claimed to have discovered Leah living in a hospice center in France in 2000 while he was creating a film there based on the sisters. The woman he claimed to be Leah had suffered a stroke, which had rendered her partially paralyzed and unable to speak, and that woman died in 2001. Either way, the sisters are buried together in the Cimetière Batellerie in Nantes. So that is the story of two pretty tragic women who had a pretty awful life,
mm-hmm.
resulting in murder and wasting away to death.
So that's great.
I know.
So it could be worse.
It could be worse. I mean, the story is wild for a lot of reasons because people like that, I just feel like if they had 1 ounce of help, one shred of decency in their life, it probably wouldn't have turned out that way.
Different century.
Yeah, but it was a pretty wild ride. When I got to the eyes gouge part, I was like, and whoop, there it is. That's why it was recommended.
Perfect.
So until next time, people, hope you liked that short one because I actually kind of really appreciated it. I enjoyed it.
It was great.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Bye.